Chapter 47. Nordman has fallen, and Vexe, S. Omberg, or Teichman, Muger almost all our best bleed more or less profusely. A gloomy silence. Exit fourth side. 10 minutes pass. Enter an officer in waiting. Francis, what guns are those that grown from wagram height? Officer, alas, Davouts. I have climbed the rooftop, sire, and there discerned the truth. Cannonade continues. A long interval of suspense. The Emperor returns to his glass. Francis, a part of it. There seems to be a grim, concerted lunge by the whole strength of France upon our right, center, and left wing simultaneously. Officer, most viciously upon the center, sire, if I mistook not, hard by Sassenbrunn. The assault is led by Bonaparte in person, who shows himself with marvelous recklessness, yet like a phantom fiend receives no hurt. Francis, still gazing, ha! Now the Archduke Charles has seen the intent, and taken steps against it. Sassenbrunn must be the threatened thing. Silence. What an advance. Straight hitherward. Our center girdles them. Surely they'll not persist? Who heads that charge? Officer, they say MacDonald, sire. Francis, meagrest remains will there be soon of those in that advance. We are burning them to bones by our hot fire. They are almost circumscribed. If fully so, the battle's ours. What's that behind them, eh? Officer, their last reserves, that they may feed the front, and sterilize our hope. Francis, yes, their reserve dragoons and cuirassiers charge in support. You see their metal gleaming as they come. Well, it is neck, or nothing for them now. Officer, it's nothing, sire. Their charge of cavalry has desperately failed. Francis, their foot press on, however, with a battery in front which deals the foulest damage done us yet. Time passes. They are effecting lodgment, after all. Who would have reckoned on our men so firm? Re-enter first aid de camp. First aid, the Archduke Charles retreats, your majesty, and the issue wears a dirty look just now. Francis, gloomily, yes. I have seen the signs for some good while. But he retreats with blows, and orderly. Time passes, till the sun has rounded far towards the west. The features of the battle now materially change. The French have regained a spurn and Essling. The Austrian army is doubled back from the Danube, and from the heights of Wagram, which, as viewed from Wolkersdorf, face the afternoon shine, the French established thereon glittering in the rays. Francis, choking a sigh, the turn has passed. We are worsted, but not overwhelmed. The French advance is labored, and but slow. This might have been another colored day, if but the Archduke John had joined up promptly. Yet still he lacks. Another officer lately entered. He's just now coming, sire. His columns glimmer in the Frenchman's rear. Past Sebenbrunn's and Lebensdorf's smoked hills. Francis, impatiently, coming now. Why could he not be come? They watch intently. We can see nothing of that sight from here. Enter a general officer, who speaks to the minister at the back of the room. Minister, coming forward, your majesty, I now have to suggest, pursuant to conclusions reached this morn, that since the front and flower of all our forces seen receding to the Bissenberg, these walls no longer yield safe shade for you, or facile outlook. Scouts returning say either Davout, or Bonaparte himself, with the mid-columns of his forward corps, will bear up hitherward in fierce pursuit, and may intrude beneath this very roof. Not yet, I think. It may not be tonight, but we should stand prepared. Francis, if we must go, we'll go with a good grace, unfeignedly. Who knows tomorrow, may not see regained, what we have lost today. Re-enter fourth aide de camp. Fourth aide, breathlessly, the Archduke John, discerning our main musters in retreat, abandons an advance that throws on him the enemy's whole brunt, if he bear on. Francis, alas for his devotion. Let us go. Such weight of sadness as we shoulder now will ring us down to sleep in Stoller's sty, if even that be found. Think. Bonapert, by reckless riskings of his life and limb, has turned the steelyard of our strength today, whilst I have idled here. May brighter times attend the cause of Europe far in Spain, and British blood flow not, as ours, in vain. Exeunt the Emperor Francis, minister, officers, and attendants. The night comes, and the scene is obscured. Scene IV, the field of Talavera. It is the same month and weather as in the preceding scene. Talavera town, on the river Tagus, is at the extreme right of the foreground, a mountain range on the extreme left. The Allied army under Sir Arthur Wellesley stretches between the English on the left, the Spanish on the right part, holding a hill to the left center of the scene, divided from the mountains by a valley, and part holding a redoubt to the right center. This army of more than 50,000 all told, of which 22,000 only are English, has its back to the spectator. Beyond, in a wood of olive, oak, and cork, are the 50,000 to 60,000 French, facing the spectator and the Allies. Their right includes a strong battery upon a hill which fronts the one on the English left. Behind all, the heights of Salinas close the prospect, the small river Alberch flowing at their foot from left to right into the Tagus, which advances in foreshortened perspective to the town at the right front corner of the scene as aforesaid. Dumb show, the hot and moldy July afternoon having turned to twilight, shady masses of men start into motion from the French position, come towards the foreground, silently ascend the hill on the left of the English, and assail the latter in a violent outburst of fire and lead. They nearly gain possession of the hill ascended. Chorus of rumors, aerial music, Talavera tongues it as 10 o the night time. Now come roughened slaughterers surging upward, backed by bold villets. From the vale lapis to, darkly outswells there. Down the vague veiled incline the English fling them, bended bayonets prodding opponents backward. So the first fierce charge of the ardent Frenchman England repels there. Having fallen back into the darkness, the French presently reascend in yet larger masses. The high square knapsack which every English foot soldier carries, and his shako, and its tuft, outline themselves against the dim light as the ranks stand awaiting the shock. Chorus of rumors, pushing spread they shout as they reach the summit. Strength and stir new primed in their plump battalions. Puffs of barbed flame blown on the lines opposing higher and higher. There those hold them mute, though at speaking distance mute, while clicking flints, and the crash of volleys whelm the weighted gloom with immense distraction pending their fire. Fronting heads, helms, brows can each ranksman red there, epaulettes, hot cheeks, and the shining eyeball, called a trice from gloom by the fleeting pan flash, pressing them nigher. The French again fall back in disorder into the hollow, and lapis draws off on the right. As the sinking sound of the muskets tells what has happened, the English raise a shout. Chorus of pities, thus the dim nocturnal embroil of conflict closes with the roar of receding gunfire. Harness loosened then, and their day-long strenuous temper unbending, worn outlines lie down where they late stood staunchly, cloaks around them rolled by the bivouac embers. There at dawn to stake in the dynast's death game all, till the ending. Scene V, the same, dumb show, continued, the morning breaks. There is another murderous attempt to dislodge the English from the hill, the assault being pressed with a determination that excites the admiration of the English themselves. The French are seen descending into the valley, crossing it, and climbing it on the English side under the fire of Hill's whole division, all to no purpose. In their retreat they leave behind them on the slopes nearly 2,000 lying. The day advances to noon, and the air trembles in the intense heat. The combat flags, and is suspended. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.